Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. My name is Paul Harvey, and I'm looking for answers. What does it mean to be successful? What does it mean to have a good, well-lived life? This podcast is conversations with people that look like they have it sorted.
Hello and welcome to the program. Since the beginning of the year, I have learned lots on this podcast journey. What I have discovered is that meaning and living a good life is available to all of us. My guests are living proof. But how do you and I get there? I am stepping up and taking the journey, and I would like you to come along with me. I will tell you more about this later in the program. So for now, on with the show. My guest this week is a young family man who is living the dream with his wife Liz and their three children. Does that sound a bit corny? And what do I mean by young? Well, at my age, anyone under 40 is pretty young. Danny Clark is in his 30th year, and to some extent, he has done all of the traditional life journey and found it wanting. On leaving education, he became a council surveyor. He did well, and that could have been a job for life, but the routine ground him down, and it was the start of the feelings of being controlled and unhappy. His solution was to quit and go travelling. They say that travel broadens the mind, and in this case, it was true. It changed his thinking, and on his return, he went back into the world of work. He explored estate agency, insurance, recruitment, and eventually entered the financial services industry. Somewhere on that journey, he got married and had three children. Life was good. He had 10 years of experience in direct sales and achieved considerable success both personally and professionally. But he and Liz had a dream of a different life, one with more freedom. They saw an opportunity in multi-level marketing. Now, before you groan, this is not a pitch for multi-level marketing or a particular company. It is the story of how they bucked a system that did not want to be bucked. Danny and Liz achieved huge success in the multi-level marketing industry, earning multiple incentives and being recognized as being in the top 1% of their company. They did this by dumping the usual routines and using normal business practice. The company hated them for not following the system and pushed them out. Not wanting to lose what they'd gained, Danny and Liz used the techniques they'd developed to build an online coaching system for people in the network marketing space. In the last 12 months alone, Danny has personally recruited 624 members to its online coaching programs. Using the power of online platforms and social media, Danny and Liz have created an income that is not bound by their location. After many years of feeling controlled and unhappy, he is now living the dream and travels the world full time with his wife and family. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Danny Clark. Hello and welcome to Danny Clark.
Hello.
Well, so great we could catch up, and thank you for taking the time out of your interesting life that you lead to kind of spend it with me this morning. It's great because I followed you for a while. I've met you last year at an event we were both at, mm-hmm. and I followed your journey from a nomadic family lifestyle, which I think is amazing. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of interesting for me to just explore that for us today. So this is Life, Passion and Business. And the reason I set this podcast up was that I recognized in myself that I had more questions than answers about the life journey that we're all on, or the life journey that I'm on. And I decided to reach out to people that I'd met or people I knew and ask them basically a simple set of questions. It's like, well, how did you get here? How did you get, what is it about for you? How has your journey been, and what's worked, what hasn't worked? So I guess that's the first question for you. How did you get to where you are, Danny?
Okay, so we're starting off with the easy stuff. Well, I suppose it helps to explain where we are. So at the moment, married, three children, and traveling around the world in a nomadic way, not in a travel just a rucksack, kind of living wherever, but very much, you know, settled in a place for 2 to 3 months at a time and then moving on. I think like the key for me and being like this is that even since I was a young kid, like the whole concept of normal and like the regularity of a routine, not that we don't have routine here, but you know, going to school, going to work, driving there, coming home. Like even since I was young, it just felt like existing. And I would say that I have for maybe not as a child, as a kid, because I don't think I was unhappy as a kid. You know, I love my childhood. Very fortunate. Both parents are together, you know, brought up in a very happy home. But certainly in my teenage years, my younger adult years, I had a lot of nice things going on, but I always had this deep unhappiness inside me. And it's because I wasn't listening to that intuition of, you know, just freedom and just being able to do what I want. And it always felt like control from someone else over me. You know, I had to go to school at a certain time, had to look a certain way, hair couldn't be swept this way, shoes had to be polished a certain way, at work, you know, be there on time, do this thing, go to this place. And I just didn't like it. I always resented that. And I suppose that's the thing that's driven me really for this. It's to firstly create a life where I get to choose what I want to do and the control that I want to have and, you know, be with the people I want to be with and explore the places that I want to go to. And, you know, I was always fascinated as I was younger about, you know, just exotic places, you know, different countries and different cultures and different types of people. And, you know, that's really the forefront of what I'm doing now. It's just that, I don't know, I suppose I've got a bit of an explorer inside of me. And, you know, that excites me, it lights me up. And, you know, hence the reason for doing it.
So that's where you are now. So obviously, what's the journey for? What's it been for you? What was your career journey to get you to this place?
Well, career journey, so my dad is... he's kind of like semi-retired now as a roof tiler. Mum has always had an office type job, you know, accountancy, that type of thing. So, you know, I was very much brought up in what I would call a traditional kind of home. You know, they're not, you know, business owners, they're not entrepreneurs as such as, you know, we would know it maybe today. So it was always kind of fed into me to, you know, get a job, you know, work hard, do well at school, you know, the usual parent things. Yeah. I stepped into a role at 17. I did really well at school. You know, my GCSEs, I can't remember now exactly what it was, but 7 or 8 A stars, 2, 3 A's, couple of B's, you know, really, really good results.
So but you're a clever guy then.
Well, I did well at school. I knew how to pass the test. So, you know, it's all perspective, right? But you know, I was good at exams. I never really applied myself very hard at school, to be honest. But I was good at remembering things, you know, so I could pass the test pretty well. But he never turned me on school. Didn't like the structure and the system. Stayed on for my A levels. I did my first year of my A levels, and then am I allowed to curse on this show or
of
not?
Of course, you can curse on this show if you want. It's your life. If you want to curse, please do.
Fine. So I basically thought, fuck it. Like I don't want to do this school thing. I wasn't bothered about going to university. There was not a university driven career that I aspired to have. I didn't want to be an architect or a doctor or anything like that that needed university. I just knew I'd go to university and get pissed up for 3-4 years, have a great time, no doubt. But I thought I'm just going to put myself in a load of debt. So I decided to enter the career place. I got a job with the council, very coincidental. I was with my dad in the summer on a building site. A building inspector came onto site. My dad said, "How'd you get your job then?" And he said, "Well, funnily enough, there's a job that's just gone in the paper for a trainee building surveyor." So I applied for it, I got it. And I was there for nearly 4 years. I enjoyed it. You know, I had a lot more money than my friends, like crazy amounts more money than my friends because I had no bills or outgoings. You know, it was all profit really at that age. And I got about, as I say, 4 years in, and I just started to get this feeling of, is this it? Because I was working with men who were late 40s, 50s, And they'd been in the same job for like 30, 40 years, and they still lived in the same town. I grew up in Skegness, you know, coastal seaside town, you know, Butlins. And I thought, oh, that's just my life. Look, I'm going to do this the next 30, 40 years. And I was at college one day a week, and I was coming back from college, and I pulled up at the traffic lights, and I saw a Foster's beer advert on a telephone box, and it was a kangaroo wearing a hat with corks. And it was obviously Australia. And I thought, right, I'm going to Australia. And so I did. So the next day I went into the office, I told mom and dad, they freaked. I had a girlfriend at the time, told her, she freaked. That was my decision made. I thought, right, I'm not living this life anymore. And so I had an agreed sabbatical for a year. I had no intention of ever coming back, but you know, I thought at least I've got something to come back to if I need to. And then went off to Australia, traveled for 3 months around Australia, loved it, was by far the best experience of my life at that time, changed so much. I went from being in what is probably quite a safe job is maybe the wrong, you know, maybe like a more normal job where I probably wasn't using my skills to the full extent, but it was a safe job, it was a career, to meeting people and kind of seeing, oh, this whole London thing and like a different way of thinking and more global thinking and bigger thinking, like with some of the people that I met who, you know, were children of like some incredibly wealthy people. And it started to change like what was possible, because I didn't think that stuff was possible to me before. Maybe I hoped, I wished, didn't think it was maybe possible. And it changed my thinking. So I came back early. My granddad's second wife, and he was pretty much like my grandma, it's all that I'd ever known. They've been together like 20 years, unfortunately passed away. So I came back to live with my granddad, just to make sure he was okay for 2 to 3 months. And then I made the decision to move to London. I thought, right, let's kind of chase that dream. Mum and dad thought I was an idiot. I thought I'd bankrupt myself. I had no money to bankrupt, but they thought that's what I would do. And so I went down there and gave it a go. And it didn't really work out. I kind of came back. Didn't really know what I was doing, you know, had big dreams, but, you know, still a young kid. And started settling back into the normality of life. And the thing that it really fucked me off with myself, I did this, I felt I'd really chosen a safe option and I hated it. And it fueled a bit of anger in me for missing the opportunity, was I basically had the option with a girl who I met in Australia, who said that she's going to go to Ibiza and we're just going to go and do a season together, not like boyfriend girlfriend, but we're just going to do a season as friends, and we'd kind of look after each other and whatever, and get a, you know, place together. And we booked the flights, got the accommodation, and then a job which I'd applied for as an estate agent, I was turned down for. And then 2 days before I was supposed to go, they rang back and they said, actually, the person that we offered the job to is no longer joining. We'd like to offer it to you. And my mum and dad said, you've got to take the job. So I took the job and I didn't go to Ibiza. And then all I saw for an entire 6 months was my friend having just the most amazing time. And I was just, ugh, I'm an idiot. And I used to sit in this office and had a huge, massive window. And so I would go there and it was dark. In the morning, and I would be there until 6 o'clock, and it was dark, and it was on the one-way system in Skegness. So there was just the cars going past all day. So I was just sat there watching literally the world go by, and oh, God, I just hated it. I just knew that I'd missed opportunities. So it kind of led into some different things. I moved into a different job, moved into an insurance role, self-employed. Thrived, like was, you know, one of the top 2-3 salespeople in the UK, had a lot of success, earned a lot of money at a pretty young age. And then quite quickly, I then met my now wife. That changed everything, which was at a very random story. I was at the airport on my way to a stag do. She was at the airport on her way to a hen do at East Midlands Airport. There's always been this little bit of travel in everything that I've done, really. It's no wonder I'm doing this. And coincidentally, we were on the same flight going to the same place, a place called Lloret de Mar, which is about 30 minutes away from Barcelona. We basically did everything but talk to one another on the plane. Like all of our friends were saying, talk to her, and I'm like, no, I'm playing it cool. And and whatever. And finally spoke to her after we jumped off the plane, agreed to meet each other. I said to my friends, I'm going to marry that girl. She said to her friends, I'm going to marry that guy. And that was it. And we was basically together forever from that point. So
it's one of those, that's one of those, you know, stories, isn't it? It's one of those kind of like magic moment stories, really.
It was weird. Like, we just kind of knew. Yeah. And, so after a couple of months, we lived together. She lived in London. So back to London, a couple of months, I moved to London, and got a job in there in recruitment, which I hated, but, you know, was together. After 3 months, so we'd only been in London for a month, she fell pregnant. Okay. what I used to call was my microwave family. It was like ready made.
Yeah.
Put a lot of pressure under us, onto us to, you know, have to think fast and do things. And we moved away from London to be closer to our parents, moved to a town called Stamford. And that was then our home for, that'll be 2011 to 2017. So, until November this year. So it was our home for like 6 years. And, you know, that's where we had our kids and everything together. And, you know, we moved home 2 or 3 times, but it's where we made our home together. But we got married March 2014. And our honeymoon, we went to Megève in France. It's a skiing location. And we were sat in the hot tub one evening, and we just sort of said to each other, because my wife, she'd traveled as well. As I was traveling Australia, she was traveling Costa Rica on her own for similar sort of time. And it, for her, like, again, best experience of her life. And we were just saying to each other, wouldn't it be cool if we could ski in the winter and snowboard in the summer? Wouldn't that be an awesome lifestyle? And it was kind of like spitballing ideas, and we were thinking, well, you know, maybe we could be like a chalet host. You know, what do we do with the kids? How does it work? And that was March 2014. And then at the time, I was a mortgage advisor. So I was in the financial services. My wife, she was a hair and makeup artist, specializing in the bridal industry. So our careers, our businesses were very much like at home. I didn't do a lot of face-to-face stuff, but it was still, I had to report to the office. There was compliance. She obviously was attending weddings at the weekend. So they weren't jobs which would fit to obviously do the things that we wanted to do, which was, you know, this idea of travel.
Yeah.
So we started looking at alternative careers. And it was a kind of coincidence, fate, I don't know, open to, you know, opportunity, I suppose, that we had 4 people in a space of 2-3 weeks who came to us, who approached us about a network marketing opportunity. Now, we'd actually done network marketing with the same company about 3-4 years prior. So we'd had a go at this and we'd failed spectacularly. But we was young and stupid and, you know, naive to the whole thing. Well, they came back to us and we thought, maybe this could be the thing that, you know, allows us to do it, because, you know, we can, you know, start to build this business online and whatever, it might give us the freedom that we want.
When you say network marketing, do you mean multi-level marketing? Is this the same kind of thing?
Pyramid schemes. Yes.
Okay.
That thing that that people either love or hate.
Yeah. I have a respect for it, but I've been burned in that arena as well. So
yeah, which I totally get. There are some absolute arseholes in the industry, and we met them. We met them.
Well, then you know what I'm talking about.
yeah. We fought against them. We still fight against them to this day.
So, were you successful in that industry?
Well, so basically what happened is we went back and we said.
I just have to break in here. So what do you think of Danny Clark? I so love having these conversations. I will take you back to that interview in a moment, because I want to tell you more about how this podcast is changing. We are growing into other platforms, and from May the 24th, there'll be 2 shows a week where I will be joined by my guest from episode 9, Lisa Avery. Now, Lisa is a positive psychologist, and she will be my co-host on the new programs. Lisa and I will be exploring the journey towards vocation and meaning. We will be offering practical tools and tips for the ride that is this life. So there'll be a few more details at the end of the show. Anyway, let's get back to Danny
and see how his life developed.
Well, so basically what happened is we went back and we said, we will do this business, but I am not doing product parties. I'm not rubbing people's feet. I am not going to hotels. I'm not driving up and down the country. I've got two young children. I've got a very, very busy business, which the mortgage business was pretty successful. You know, most years close to maybe sneaking over six figures in turnover. And there wasn't a lot of cost really. So, you know, it's pretty decent, you know, profit and salary that I could pay myself from that.
Yeah.
I was like, it ain't interrupting that thing because that's the bread and butter. Definitely you can do all that. Yeah, you can do it online. So we joined and we jumped in and then we realized, oh no, you can't do this online. We've kind of been hoodwinked a little bit here, but we'll give it another go. And so we tried for a year and we basically did it a traditional way, as it's referred to in the MLM industry. And we had some okay success, but it wasn't sustainable. We hated it. And we got to the point where we basically said, look, we're either going to quit, which we really didn't want to do because we'd quit before and we'd always had pretty decent success, whatever we tried, but this would be the second time we'd failed at this thing. It was like, oh God, that's embarrassing. Or we just do it our own way. And so we decided to do it our own way. And then within 6 months, we smashed it, flew up the ranks, hit like top 1% of the company, earned cars, incentives, rewards, holidays, you know, everything. So we had success, you know, with that industry, which, you know, was great. And we did it in a way which went against what everybody else, well, not everybody, there's other people like us, but which what a lot of people traditionally do, which perhaps a bit spammy, a bit forceful, maybe a bit 1980s insurance salesman type approach.
So what is different about your approach? Because this is what you do now, isn't it? This is what you promote now.
Yeah. So basically, we coach people in that industry and small business owners and entrepreneurs, is not just network marketers, but it's, you know, there's a lot of them. And I would say the style is very aligned to online marketing, which I know can get its, you know, bad rep anyway. But you know, it's very much value driven content marketing. Having to build relationship with people, showing people how to build relationship, how to grow your level of influence online, you know, how to kind of create authority, all strategies which I would consider to be long term.
How would you do it? So I'm going to get geeked out on this. I need to be careful because this could get me off topic. But how do you do that in a business model where everybody's the same? You know, if we're all selling herbal supplements with the same branding, yeah, how do you differentiate yourself?
Yeah, and this is the challenge because everybody copies everybody else.
Yeah.
So it actually makes it very easy to stand out because everybody else is copying everybody else. You know, so I'm sure it's Zig Ziglar that said, you know, when everyone zigs, then zag.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the personal brand stuff. Because even though you work for company XYZ, nobody really joins company XYZ. They join Danny's business, yes, or Paul's business.
Yes, of course.
So it isn't the company that's the most important thing. It's the person. It's a person business. So,
yes,
you know, it's like
a plumber. You know, plumber does plumbing, but it's actually the personality of the plumber that.
Absolutely, yeah, and it's the quality of the job, yeah, and it's the service, and yeah, it's the aftercare, and it's the, yeah, value for money. That's why someone goes back to them, or why somebody, yeah, recommends and refers that, yeah, person.
So you're, yeah, taking MLM, and in a way, you're turning it into a real business.
Yes, that is exactly it.
I can see why, yeah, I can see why you're popular.
Yeah, because there's nobody that does that. It's very rare because people treat it like they say they're going professional or they're doing the right things to build a online business. They're business owners, but they're not. They're just people who are just spamming the shit out of their company profile, and that's it. So they're the one thing that lacks when I was looking to, because I had to look outside of industry to find, you know, the help and support that I needed because there wasn't anything. I thought maybe it was a company problem. I looked further. I thought maybe it's a UK problem. I looked further. I thought, wow, this is an industry problem. Like nobody teaches people how to actually run a proper business. And, you know, people are so focused on, and the problem with the industry and how it's been is that it rewards the narcissistic, egotistical people, you know, the people who push, who force, who don't maybe care about long term, because they're just pushing people through the system. Like they're just getting people, spitting them out, getting people, spitting them out. And that's why MLM gets a bad name, because people get burnt from it. They get hurt.
I can remember when I was involved in it, and I can remember seeing the same people on the stage all the time, the same people getting the rewards, the same people getting acknowledged. And you think to yourself, hang on a minute. This is like a story.
Never changes.
It's the same people at the top getting paid.
And it's the way that the model as it currently runs is designed. You know, it's like the people with money, they keep the money, because as soon as somebody comes up with a new idea or a fresh approach, this is what we happened with our old company. We got forced out. They hated us because there was like this really cool way that's happened with rapid results. You know, they just, everything they could say, oh, they've lied, they've made it up, they didn't do it that way, they faked the car presentations, they made it up, they bought their way there, they put it all on credit cards, all false accusations. But the problem was that it disturbed the common story.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, like what they're saying and preaching as gospel, and it takes 5 years to get to the top. Great. We've done it in 6 months.
Oh, wow.
And so all of a sudden, it just blows their story away.
Yeah.
And so what do you do? Do you go, hey, maybe there's a better way. Let's listen to this guy. Or do we say this guy's an arsehole and everything he says is wrong, so it protects the story? You know, it's just spin, it's politics. You know, when the country's turned into shit, who do they blame? The Russians, the immigrants, or, you know, somebody else? Somebody, you know, they don't take responsibility.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing. So that's why MLM has a bad rap. That's why we've got a long way to go. I have no idea why this MLM and this mission now to kind of help make it a better place is now the thing that we've fallen into, but it is what it is, so this is where we are.
How does this, I mean, all right, how does this manifest? So you've created a thing or something that supports people in the MLM industry. What is it you've created?
So we are coaches and mentors.
Okay.
First and foremost, we teach people how to build a business online.
Yeah.
And there's lots of other people that do that, you know, like it's not like it's unique to teach people how to use social media, right?
We both have similar contacts that do the same thing and in similar groups ourselves. So yes, of course.
Exactly. So, you know, it's not like that's unique, but I think the thing which I believe is different to what we're doing is it's not just the information which providing, because information is everywhere. You know, you can find the tools, but it's the intention behind it. And what we're looking to use it with, because you can build your business online and be an absolute arsehole.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not about building your business online, but for me, it's about building a business online. And the reason why I'm so passionate about this is not because, God forbid, like I think I'm better than people or that I have the best way or that my way is the only way, but it's because I have been an arsehole in my past.
Uh-huh.
And I have done things which I'm not proud of.
Uh-huh.
And I have said things which I knew were not true to make people do things. And what happens is you have success and you fucking hate yourself.
Yeah.
You don't have freedom. You don't have true freedom because you know that it's a lie and you know that you can get found out and you know that it can go wrong and you know that you've hurt people.
Yeah.
And I think as you start to create responsibility in a space, whatever the industry, whatever it is, your thing, there comes a time where you have to say, right, this then becomes bigger about just me. There's actually a very important role that I can play in this space to just improve everything. Because I see people who are on the stage, you know, being celebrated as these incredible leaders who can't afford to pay for their car. They're just lying, and yet they're trapped in this bubble of this lie. And the two biggest things that I look for in my life and what I look for to help people with their clients is freedom and happiness.
Yeah.
Right? I mentioned it through my story. I've hated control my entire life. Like I've always been the freedom guy.
Yeah.
Happiness, I've struggled with happiness my entire life. I now have happiness. I want other people to have it. I went through the shit that felt like control and the shit that felt like unhappiness, and I know why I went through those things. And so I tell people, if you build your business or you do these things in this way, you will have more control and you will have more unhappiness. Crack on if that's what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can have the same results, but in 10 years' time, you'll have freedom and you'll have happiness because of the way that you've built it. You know, and it's not that my way is the only way. There are other ways that you can do that. Cool. Whatever works for you. But I can just tell people what's worked for me. And if that then hopefully works for them as well, then that's what I see as my job now.
That's really interesting common thread that's coming out of all these interviews that I've been doing with people. And it's that there is no one way. And you also can't copy someone else's way. What you can do is you can hear the story, what someone else is, and see how it applies to you. Mm-hmm. And that is really coming out as a common thread, because some people's versions of passion or versions of happiness are completely different.
Correct.
So you've mentioned a couple of points that I want to pick up on. So passion, where does your passion come from and how do you maintain it?
Where does my passion come from? My passion comes from anger and hurt. It's like a very, it kind of sits in my chest and my gut. And I think it's from, you know, even now, like, not that I will cry, and I don't really cry, but I can kind of feel it brimming just under the surface. This feeling of just having to settle and not being happy and not being, I don't know, like a spiritual person might say, like being in your truth as such and not being in that place. And I just know, because I've just sat in that unhappiness for years. So what happens is I speak to my clients and I can just see it within seconds. I can see it in their eyes, because I think I recognize that feeling. I can remember looking at myself in the mirror, not telling the truth. And I don't mean in a malicious way always, although it is kind of malicious to yourself, but when you're not being totally honest with yourself in the world, and it fucking sucks. So that's what drives a lot of me, because I know how upsetting and challenging and difficult it was for me for so many years. And I know that you don't have to live your life like that. So I hate to see other people suffer with that. And as a kid, I always loved the underdog. I always saw myself as an underdog. I saw myself as the person that nobody really backed, but it was almost like you watch, you see what happens over the next 20 years. You might beat me in the next 20 minutes, but 20 years, like, you know, I'll get my moment sort of thing. Yeah. You know, I'll prove my worth. I'll earn my stripes. And, you know, so at school, you know, I was in the popular group as such. I was a footballer. So, you know, you kind of always get a pass into the popular group as a boy at school if you play football. But there was two lads who were the more popular kids at school, who were just utter arseholes. And I would stand up to them and I would kind of call them out. And, you know, for example, at lunchtime, we play football, nobody dare tackle them. You know, I'd lunge in and smack them out because I didn't like them. But then, you know, they'd retaliate, they'd turn around and they'd like give me a good kick and or punch me or push me over or whatever. Nobody'd say or do anything. But I'd like, no, you know, fuck you guys. Like, I'd want to stand up. Or they'd say something to like the unpopular kids. And I say, no, don't do that. Like, so I've always kind of had this thing for the underdog. And I think it's because I've always perhaps perceived myself as a bit of an underdog. So a little bit it's fueled from that as well, I think.
And you mentioned happiness. So is there a definition of happiness for you?
I struggled to define this. And this was one of the things which led me to the unhappiness, I think, for a long time. And it was because I struggled with happiness because I didn't know what it was.
I have a similar I have a similar problem with happiness because I spend a lot of time being content. But I don't know what happiness is. It's like,
yeah. And people don't seem to understand that.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that's they're not being honest or whether they do. And my brain just works differently. But, you know, I'd always feel like, you know, I'd be a happy event, but I would just be kind of looking around thinking, I feel a bit bored, to be honest. Like, you know, and I'd actually probably rather be somewhere else. But everyone else is really happy. So I never knew what it was to achieve it. You know, I didn't know whether I had to look a certain way. I didn't know if I had to feel a certain way. Mm. I didn't know if I had to have certain accomplishments. I mean, I certainly had things in my life that, you know, if we look at what you should have, you know, gorgeous wife, three beautiful, healthy children, a lovely house, a nice car, you know, a pretty decent, you know, job and income and whatever, like the standard things that we should go in for. But I think I've always had, and I think it's why I didn't understand it, because I knew deep down I wasn't listening to what I always knew that I could do. I've always had this thing in me where I knew that I was destined for something big. I never knew what it was, but I always knew there was something big in me. I always knew that it was being some sort of servant leader to help people.
Yeah.
I always knew that it would be standing up for people, almost like the voice of the voiceless kind of thing, because I've never really given a shit about saying things. You know, I don't care, like, if somebody doesn't like me, like, whatever. But I would stand up for the guy that couldn't say something. So I always knew it was something like that. When I was a kid, I used to try and describe it to my mum and dad, and I'd explain it as this James Bond feeling that I had inside me, where I knew that I had to go and do something to save, rescue, help someone.
All right.
So it probably was myself that I was probably trying to say. But so I always knew there was this thing. So in answer to, like, that, the happiness point of view, like, what was it? Like, how do I define it? I never could, and I still can't now, but I feel happy.
Yeah.
And it's a feeling. It's not I can't define it. I just kind of sit in this space, and I look out, and I just smile. I'm just happy. I walk around, and, you know, things still make me sad. Things still upset me. Things still make me cross and angry, but I just feel happy. And the reason for that is because I'm doing what I always thought I should be doing, which is serving people and helping people and doing the thing that I'm passionate about.
So you're talking about alignment, aren't you, in a way?
Yes.
That's what comes. Yeah. That's what comes from me at the moment. From that, that was the word that came into my mind when you said that. You know, you said that you're serving people. You're in the nice surroundings. You're where you want to be, and you're in alignment with your core story.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and this is the freedom and happiness thing coming up again, because the things that I used to do before, I was told should make me happy, but they didn't, and I wasn't telling the truth. And then I started telling the truth more to myself and to others about what I really want. And then I went and got those things, and then guess what? Started being happier. You know, so
it is interesting, because there's this thing. There's external happiness and internal happiness.
Yeah.
And the external happiness is the car, the wife, the kids, the house, the things that are around us, mm-hmm. or the going out on the beer, on those bits and pieces, the time you have with mates. That's external happiness, and it is somewhat fed by external things. And I think a lot of people live for external happiness, and they don't actually get the internal happiness.
Correct. Yeah.
Which is more about balance.
Yeah. Yeah. I was always looking for external happiness.
Yeah.
You know, I was always looking for a new item of clothing or a new night out with a friend, or I'd drink, you know, a few too many beers to make me happier, or I would put the pressure on my wife to make me happy, or I would have an expectation of my children to behave a certain way so I'd be happy. And if they didn't, then I'm failing. And it was, yeah, it's the internal, but I only really figured out, and it's been a big shift over the last 6 months or so. You know, this isn't, you know, something I've figured out for years and years. I mean, you know, you've probably kind of seen this stuff with, you know,
when I met you, you were not a happy chappy.
No.
I knew that from that conversation we both had. I mean, you weren't a happy chappy, but I've seen you get happy mm-hmm. over the last few months. So it's, for me, from an external perspective, I've watched it happen.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have, and I think it's important to me for that, like, to show people, like, you know, that stuff's possible. But the reason, and I think one of the main reasons why I was able to figure out this happiness thing is that we did the traveling thing, you know, and to a degree, that's what I wanted to do. Of course, that's going to make me happy, but it's that pattern interrupts. It's a change of scenery. Mm-hmm. It's forcing yourself to have to face fears. It's stopping drinking alcohol, which was huge for me, December 26th. And
what happened was I knew that I had to become this better person for me to be satisfied in my life, that I was doing the very best that I could for myself, for my family, for other people. I knew that I had to get better because I knew that I could only take me and, you know, the people that I look after so far. And I knew that I'd hit that limit, because I'd hit that limit financially, emotionally, spiritually, whatever, right? And so I knew that I had to make changes. So stop drinking alcohol, which was massive for me. Not that I was ever a big drinker or a heavy drinker, but I would have a drink when I felt unhappy. Mm. So even though I didn't have a drinking problem, I, to a degree, had a problem with drink, because I would use it as a tool to mask, to numb pain. The same as I would watch shit TV, or I would argue with the wife, or I would do whatever I did. It's just a numbing thing to not deal with the real shit that I had going on internally. Yeah. And then I stopped drinking. I sought the help that I put off for years because I knew that it was going to be painful, but I felt that I had to do it. I was ready to do it. I wanted to do it. Was that, so I had those sessions.
Was that a counselor or something?
Mindset. You know, not counseling, typical counseling, but more mindset, business coaching, life coaching, that kind of stuff, yeah. spiritual coaching. And so all the stuff that I'd put off for a long time, because I knew I'd do it at some point, but I was putting it off until I knew I had to do it. I did. And what happened was the first month I started working through shit that, oh God, it's painful to have to deal with stuff that was, you know, about my dad, who I loved to death. But I also knew that I had some stuff that I was holding on from childhood where I put blame against him, or, you know, certain things had happened, and not that there was bad things, but, you know, when you hold on to those, those emotions and those traumas and stuff, and, you know, not that I don't blame them, but it was there still. And so dealing through that, and then having gone through it and thought, I think I've shifted something now. There's been a change. And then the next thing, and then the next thing, and then the next thing, and then the next. And it's just this massive, just bam, 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 bang, just stuff just clearing and figuring it out and thinking, whew, wow, like I've got rid of a lot of baggage that was holding me back. And it allowed me to listen to myself internally. So I was being honest with myself, removed all the bullshit, got rid of all the lies, moved to the side, the ego, which was huge. And, you know, just started listening and being honest with myself. The happiness came from that.
That's lovely. That's lovely. Thanks for sharing that. Cause it's, it is quite a big thing to share that, I think.
It's all right. I think it feels normal to share it. Well, it feels normal. It feels weird to not share it.
A lot of people would find that quite unusual for someone to share that sort of stuff. And I think it's actually valuable to acknowledge you for it.
Thank you.
So we've covered happiness. We've touched on passion, and clearly you are passionate about what you do. So that's clear. And I mean, you've not lost your passion. You've always had it. So there's nothing to talk about in terms of that. You are still passionate. You touched on happiness as in things. And that's an interesting point, because there's a definition of success, and the definition of success that we were all taught was the fast car or the car, the house, the life.
Yeah.
You know, and so what is the definition of success for you? And I think I know the answer, but I'll ask it anyway. I think you're living it, but
it's freedom and happiness. Like, yeah. My wife finds this really strange, but I don't give a shit about money. Couldn't care less. Like, I am in no way financially driven. Never have been. I've had financial goals and I've achieved them, but I don't care about money. The thing that makes me happy is I'm doing it right now. I'm looking out of a window. I grew up near the sea. The sea is definitely important to me. I don't know whether it's like a calming influence or whatever, but I love looking at open water. Mm. But I'm looking out the window. I'm not in any way blocked in. I haven't got a fence in the garden. There's not high trees. And all I can see is, for miles around me, I can see the ocean, which is stunning. I can see for miles up to the horizon. The sky is blue. That, for me, is happiness. That's all I need. You know, just for myself.
And that's success.
Yeah, I could just sit here looking at that all day, every day. Next things, right? Obviously, after the self, it's, you know, wife, kids, like, there's different kind of successes, right? But for me, that to me is success. You know, if I have that and I know that I've tried my best in all the other areas of my life, being a husband, being a parent, to my clients, and if I know that I've really tried my best, then I'm happy, I'm content with that view.
Mm.
And that's it.
Great. So we're coming to the end of our time together. So, and there's a couple of questions left that I always ask my guests. And so one of them is an open question for you. And that is there anything that I haven't asked you that I should have done?
What's your legacy going to be?
Well, I mean, basically it's the, and I know everyone does this. It's like, oh, I wish I'd said so-and-so. So this is an opportunity for you to say what you like. What is missing? What haven't I asked you about?
I think, and it's only because it started to come up as a thing for me. And I mentioned earlier, like, as I'm starting to become more influential, I've struggled with that a little bit. It feels a bit weird. It feels like a bit of a power thing, which I to a degree, the ego likes that, but then I don't maybe feel comfortable with
that. Did you just call yourself an influencer?
Yeah, arsehole, right?
Anyway,
but you know, let's call a spade a spade. I'm starting to have influence.
Yes, okay.
In my space, you know, we've just been recognized like the number one guy in the industry. Like,
he's so asked basically other people are telling you that you have influence, and that's kind of, you're kind of going, oh, how did that happen?
Basically, yes. And I'm starting to feel like a responsibility, and like things that I would say before, because I thought, fuck it, whatever, I'm now having to think, okay, what's the bigger picture here? So I've been starting to think much bigger, and bigger vision and legacy, and, you know, kind of what I want to leave behind. And there's actually a podcast I listened to by Ryan Stewman, Hardcore Closer. And he basically said how he talked about his own legacy. And I thought, you know, I get this and I agree with this. And I think there's certain people, there's people like Jim Rohn, there's people like Zig Ziglar, who Dale Carnegie, even in another 100 years, like, they will still be spoken about. And I think I would love to have the positive influence and impact left on the world, that when someone says the name Danny Clark, like, it's just left with that. He left a positive impact.
It sounds to me like you need to be talking to a friend of ours and writing a book.
I already have. Yeah. It went so far and it stopped because I was still unhappy and I didn't know what I was doing, but I'm gonna be hitting that person back up very shortly. Yes.
Just for anyone knows, if you're looking at writing a business book, Colette Mason is the lady to speak to.
That is the one. Yeah, she's awesome.
She is awesome. I'm currently reading her book at the moment because she lent me a pre-copy that I'm reading you for her. And I have to say, it's like hearing her voice in my head. It's like,
is that a nice thing or is that a scary thing?
No, it's just it's just amazing that she can write. She writes as she speaks, and it's just an amazing thing to listen to this book. And I'm reading this book.
She's awesome.
And I'm going, wow, and there's so much content in the book. My head can't hold it all.
Do you know why I think she's so brilliant? Is because I had a pretty shitty message person do something pretty shitty not too long, a couple of weeks ago. And I posted about it. I didn't name names or anything, but I posted about it. And there was two people that reached out to me, and one of them was Colette. And that's the sort of person that she is. She reaches out and she just goes, hey, are you okay? And I think that's testament to the sort of person that she is. She is one of the good ones.
She certainly is. So the final question I have for you as my guest, and this is the question which you can answer how you like, and you've already touched on spirituality slightly because you mentioned it a couple of times. So here's my struggle. My father died last year, as you know, because we met not long after. And what I hadn't realized at the time is that when I was at that event, and why I struggled at that event is that I was grieving, and I hadn't noticed that I was grieving. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that came out from all of that is that, and it's the question, this why this podcast exists, is what is it all for? We're born, we have an experience of childhood, but we eat, we drink, we have sex, we have families, we have partners, we make money. Is that it? What's it all for?
What is it all for? I think, I'm still very young, so I think this is a question for me to be asking of others, really, as opposed to maybe answering at my 30 years young. But I think...
you could have the answer even at 30. That's the point. You would know. But it might change for you.
Yeah. I think, what is it all for? I think the one thing that I realized is I was very goal orientated for everything. I thought everything was at the destination. And I think that pursuit of happiness as such, or, that kind of thing, what is it all for? I think it's about just falling in love and finding the happiness and finding the love in the journey, and making sure. And it's so hard to be present these days, like with social media and notifications pinging all the time. And, it's really easy to kind of live in the future and live in the past and whatever. But I think just to kind of be in the present and just enjoying those moments as they come. Because the moments which are really powerful in your life aren't all that common. Like, we can all probably look back on a few poignant moments. And I think it's just, being, what's it all about? It's to be in such a place where you can just be there to recognize and remember those moments. And just to, do whatever the fuck makes you happy, basically.
Yeah. And I think that's a good enough answer. That's your answer.
I try my best.
That's your answer. Yeah. And I think it's as valid as any other answer. I mean, but the common theme that comes out, and you mentioned it, is love. It's that expression and that experiencing of love.
Yeah. I think there was everything that we do, we're searching for a feeling, right? Whether it's an argument, whether it's a Facebook post, right? We're all chasing a feeling all the time. And I think happiness, freedom, whatever, it's maybe not the word I would use, but I get it. It's that being in a place of love. Mm. It sounds a bit too woo-woo for me to maybe say that, but I get it. And it makes sense to me, where you're not sat with anger. You're not hateful towards others. You're not ego. You're not trying to get more, but you're just in this kind of state of love where you're just like, yep. It's like content. I'd use maybe the word content, like you mentioned before, where you're just happy, just kind of in that love state. Yeah. You're smiling, even though nothing's happening. You're still just smiling to yourself, thinking, "What am I doing? What a wally!"
I still go back to the conversation I had with Doberman Dan. It was such an amazing conversation because we stopped the interview, but the recording was still finishing. We're just waiting, and then he started on a complete new tangent, and then he suddenly stopped and he kind of held his breath and he went, "I'm not sure I should say this, but I'm going to anyway. It's about love." It was like he just went there and it was just an amazing conversation. It's like, as I said, it's a very common theme I'm getting from other people. And you mentioned about places and points in time. And I agree with you. I do have those places and points in time with my son. Those points when we were just together on a project or on something. I mean, I'm helping him with revision at the moment and just talking about physics together. And and him and I exploring that, like, how would you answer that question? It's like you after to walk away and go, that was a nice interaction, actually. That was quite fun, So it is those moments. And I'm starting to recognize and realize that's what it is for me.
And I think that's one of the best things about traveling in the way that we are. My wife, she went back to the UK this weekend for a few days.
see her family, and she was staying with her sister. And she said, what happened in the morning on the Monday, she said, it just brought back all of these memories of living the normal existence, which was the rush, the stress, the anger, the craziness of just getting out of the house and then getting to the yoga class and then getting to work and then getting, right, you're just always getting somewhere. Like, there's always this pressure of having to be somewhere or be doing something or an expectation on you and whatever. So we're always in this state where we're so to the wire all the time, we're always going to fail. Yeah. Right, we're always going to miss the appointment. We're always going to be 5 minutes behind. We're always going to do something wrong. We're always going to have to ignore the kids or put them in front of the TV because we can't keep up. We need a breath. We're going to lose our mind. And being here, traveling in this way, and not having the stress of having to get up for school in the morning, for example, and just having that, you know, I would say we probably have achieved for ourselves just living this lifestyle probably an extra 2-3 hours a day. So we can still do exactly the same, but we also have that extra bit of time. Yeah. And it's that extra bit of time where you can just go, oh, and you can just catch a breath. And it's when you catch a breath that you can actually go, hey, that was pretty nice, actually. Mm-hmm. Where normally you don't get the time to recognize that you're doing the nice things. Yeah. Because it's the next thing, it's the next thing, it's the next thing. You know, it's me having a cup of tea and going out to the balcony and just having the sun on my face and just going, rather than thinking, right, next call, next call, next call, next, you know, I think it's that lack of pressure on myself, yeah, because of the lifestyle that allows me certainly the chance to breathe, which allows me to register and take notice more of the moments and, you know, probably be aware of those nice things that are happening on a more, well, they happen for everyone on a day-to-day occurrence, yeah, but just having the chance to notice them, which is nice. And that actually sounds like my father-in-law speaking. I'm sure that's the sort of stuff that he would talk about as well.
So, Danny, if people would like to get in touch with you and explore more of your MLM journey or how you could help them, how's the best way to get in touch with you?
Probably not too, because I don't like humans.
Okay.
No. If you want to do, it's just social media. So personal profile, Danny Clark. Business page is Dan and Liz with my wife and I. If you're an MLM kind of person or thinking about that sort of stuff, we've got a group, The Free Life, with Dan and Liz. It's the easiest way to kind of check us out. We've got the website, freelifewithdanandliz.com. You know, reach out, say hello. Okay. You know,
so those, I'm happy those, to talk those to links will be on the podcast page.
Okay, awesome.
That's great. So, Danny Clark, thank you for your time today. It has been a real joy to speak to you.
Yeah, loved it. Much appreciated for the opportunity of speaking.
Great. Thanks, Danny.
Thanks, man.
That was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Danny Clark. If you would like to follow up or connect with Danny, the links to his Facebook groups and pages and business profiles are on the website lifepassionandbusiness.com. As you know, this podcast is growing and evolving with the second weekly show and more channels. The shows will be based on the new Facebook group of the same name, Life, Passion and Business. So please join the group where you will find all of the podcasts and additional resources that will build up over time, everything that you need to support your journey. The new podcast will start as Facebook Live presentation videos in the group. If you would like to join us live, you are welcome to our first broadcast, which will be at 4 p.m. UK time, the 17th of May. Your questions and comments will be welcomed and appreciated. If you cannot make the live event, that's fine. The audio will be available from the 24th of May. It only remains me to say thanks for listening, and I hope to see you in the Facebook group. All the best.